Omaganat Miranda Shaganan Janash Lakaya Chakshuran Miditam Yena Tasmai Shigravedi Namaha. So we're going to start with very ancient dates before modern recorded history, and the way we can date these particular dates or understand these dates are accurate is because there are descriptions in the Vedic literatures like the Mahabharata of different phases of the planets, the sun and the moon, when eclipses took place. And using modern computers, we can actually turn the computer back or something, not actually turn it back, but we can actually understand when those phases took place, when those astrological phases took place. So this is not just me guessing. You know, sometimes devotees guess. They say, oh, 5,000 years ago there was the Mahabharata war. Well, I'll tell you exactly the date, and we can actually even tell you the exact times, you can look at your watches, when Krishna left the planet. Wow. Interesting. So we're going to start with 3,227 BCE. That means before the present era. That's a long time ago. And so, at that particular point, the Yuga Avatar appeared in the previous Yuga. Who's the Yuga Avatar? Krishna! And he appeared to enact his pastimes, and as we know, what? Puritranaya Sadunam Vinashaya Chaduskritam. He came to destroy the miscreants, establish religious principles, and protect all of us, the devotees, if you happen to be a devotee. So Krishna came for that purpose, and then what he did in order to annihilate the miscreants, what did he do to annihilate, this is going to be questions and answers. What did Krishna do to annihilate all the miscreants like that? A battlefield of Kurukshetra. How many days was that?
18
days. Wow. There's some numerical count. Some people say 640 million. Prabhupada wrote another time 6.4 million. Whatever it is, it's a lot of people. And the reason Krishna had to do that sounds like a massacre, doesn't it? The reason Krishna had to do that, it was an interplanetary battle between the good guys and the bad guys, or the devas, they're the good guys, and the demons, or daityas, danavas, who had come down to the earth to establish the earth, little Star Wars here, as a Death Star. Sorry, I had to add that one in. But they came down to take over the earth. This actually happens. There are interplanetary battles. There are flying saucers. They didn't need flying saucers. They took birth on the earth, and especially there were the Kauravas. And so Krishna arranged for his forces to take birth on the earth. And his forces were the Pandavas and all the allies of the Pandavas. So they took birth on the earth. And Krishna, of course, appeared. Before Krishna appeared, of course, he told everybody, you better go before me because you're supposed to help me. Also, this is the 50th anniversary of Srila Prabhupada's founding ISKCON. So this is a very similar thing that happened more recently, of course. Before Prabhupada came to the West, Prabhupada arranged with Krishna that many people would be put in the West to assist him as soon as he arrived. Because just like Krishna comes with his associates, you never find an important man alone, usually not. An important man comes with his, you know, his associates, family, and everything like that. So Krishna comes. So Prabhupada also had associates who came. And some of those associates have already left the planet, like Srila Tumal Krishna Maharaj and others, because Prabhupada is preaching somewhere else. Just like when Krishna left the planet, a few years after that, Arjuna left the planet. After Arjuna had protected some of Krishna's wives, of course they were kidnapped, but that's another story. So Arjuna and the other Pandavas, they left the planet because they travel with Krishna. Krishna says to Arjuna in the Gita that many, many times, I spoke this Bhagavad Gita before, millions of years ago. And Arjuna is thinking, I don't remember that. And Krishna says, you can't remember, I'm paraphrasing, of course, because, you know, you change your body. Whereas Krishna doesn't change his body. Krishna is always the same. He's the same Krishna. He appears differently. He puts on different disguises, like half man, half lion. He puts on the disguise of a big boar. He puts on the disguise. All these interesting disguises. You know, 8,400,000, Prabhupada said, all the species of life. Krishna is not just a boring old god with an old beard on, you know. He has fun. We were talking about that this morning in class, that Krishna, for him, everything is fun. And for us, some things are fun, some things are not. But Krishna is bringing us to the point so we can have fun all the time. And sometimes, just like going to the dentist, we made that example this morning, you have to suffer a lot to enjoy later on. Sorry if there are any dentists in the room, because I know they all get upset when I use that example. So Krishna arranged for this war to be fought, and the demons, they went somewhere else. They reincarnated somewhere else, and the battle continues. Of course, in Kali Yuga, all of us are a little affected with demons, or a lot affected with demons, and we were somewhat affected by devotees, so it's just like an internal struggle. So you don't have to go around killing anybody. You have to kill the mentality that's interfering with your experiencing bliss or happiness. And we do that by chanting Hare Krishna, like that. So getting back to the history, I mean, I could speak for a long time about the history. So there was the Mahabharata War and 3142 BCE. And then after the Mahabharata War, Krishna decided, we got to leave here, guys and girls. We got to go somewhere else. So Krishna arranged for his whole dynasty to leave this world. They sort of self-destructed. They fought each other. So Krishna arranged for that. And then Krishna left this world in 3102 BCE. Krishna left the world then at 2:27 in the afternoon. That's astrologically calculated, 2:27 in the afternoon, an auspicious time. So what happens when Krishna leaves? Does anyone know? What starts?
Kali
Yuga. And that means quarrel. People can't get along with their husbands, wives, or parents. People can't get along with, there's fighting. They even have internal conflicts, schizophrenia. So, split personalities. I had one person I knew who had 12 different personalities. Yeah. It was useful because this person was able to do different things, construction one day and deity worship the next day. So this is Kali Yuga. It's a true story. That can be corroborated by the other devotees who were with me at that time. So in Kali Yuga, there's so much conflict. Kaler Doshanad Hey Rajan Ashjeko Mahadguna. It's an ocean of difficulty. And you see this, read the news. Read the politics. How these politicians have such loving relationships with each other in America. And those of you from India know that they actually fight each other fisticuffs in the parliament there, don't they? They do. Oh my God, this is Kali Yuga. This is not the time for Kumbaya. So that started in 3102, exactly when Krishna left. So one of the things that happened when Kali Yuga started was that the priestly class, or the brahmanas, as they say in India, they started to exploit people in the name of religion. That actually was one of the first symptoms. Actually, in the Bhagavatam, it describes that religion, or people will be considered according to their dress. Just like if someone dresses as a sannyasi, you say, oh, it's a saintly person. And then if I dress somewhere else, oh, you're just an old guy. Just like we have this program in Chapel Hill, preaching or sharing Krishna consciousness with the young people. So one time I went in my Western clothes, and everybody said, oh, hey guy, how are you doing? But then I said, well, this is not going to work. I'm supposed to be helping these people understand Krishna. So then I went in these duds, and everyone said, oh, please accept my obeisances. So Kali Yuga is like that. You identify someone according to the position or the dress. That's what the Bhagavatam says. Religion is just a change of dress in Kali Yuga. So, therefore, religious people started to cheat everywhere. We're not just talking about in India. But in India, what happened was that the Brahmins, they said, okay, you have to be born as a Brahmin to be a Brahmin. And, of course, in the West, we haven't gone that far yet. You have to be born as a priest to be in a priest family. But in the Middle East, it was like that, too. In the Middle East, you had certain tribes, in the Jewish religion, for example, and there were certain tribes where you were a priest automatically. And if you weren't a member of that priest, you just had to shovel dirt or something. So the same thing happened in India. It's not just India, it's all over the world. So these brahmanas, they started to exploit people because they had a monopoly. You know, if you want to get blessed, come to us, and it will cost 5,000 rupees for a blessing, 10,000 for a better blessing, and if you want to go back to Godhead, you know, it's 1 lakh of rupees. It happened in the church too. They had these things that they would sell where you can just get liberated, go back to Godhead or whatever they called it there in the church. And they'd buy it. That's how they built the Vatican. They'd sell these things, you know, you get back, it doesn't matter what you do. You can kill people, it doesn't matter. You bought your certificate, you know, back to God, you know, back to heaven. And so this happened all over the world. There's cheating in the name of religion. And you see this today, too. So much cheating, so much violence in the name of religion. So let's talk about India now, because we're talking about Vaishnav history. So what happened is that it got too much. And also they were killing animals in the name of religion. This also happened in Israel too. In Israel, they turned the temple into a slaughterhouse. Just like in India, you know, you have, there were offerings of goats to the goddess Kali and all those different things. Well, in Israel, they were offering lambs instead of goats. They didn't have so many goats. So they decided to offer lambs. And outside the temple, there were money changers and selling goats. So you could go in and have a goat's head cut off or whatever they did with them later. And so religion got really contaminated. But in India, Krishna decided to do something. What did he do? He sent down an incarnation. That incarnation was Buddha. Buddha, the word Buddha means knowledge, intelligence, like that, like the Buddha Yoga, like that. So Buddha came down in 563 BCE. So you're giving it time, I mean, if you wanted to take notes. I could send this list to anyone who wants, emails me later on. It's a very interesting list. I was inspired when I saw it just to talk about it. So then Buddha appeared, and Buddha, at the same time the Buddha appeared, there was also the Jainism, and a lot of people just left the society, they're called the Runyakas, who went to the forest just to get away from all this Brahminical cheating. So what Buddha established was ahimsa, nonviolence. Nonviolence is the topmost dharma. Incidentally, Buddha never preached against the existence of God. Even the one sermon that they talk about, which is called the Sermon at Deer Park, where they say where Buddha talks about the non-existence of God, he doesn't say that. He doesn't say that. Buddha taught mainly nonviolence and psychological means for dealing with this world and becoming peaceful, which is fine. And also, he took people away from the Vedas. So you may say, why should he take people away from the Vedas if the Vedas are so good? The reason is people were misusing the Vedas. Just like if you have a car and you're not using your car properly, let's say if you know you're one of the devotees here, and you were not using the car properly, you're getting speeding tickets, which I had to pay for, because unfortunately I'm running the temple. So, that will change. So, which I had to pay for, then I'd say, give me the keys, buddy. You're walking. And they would say, you know, I have to drive. I don't care. You're walking. So that's exactly what Buddha did. He took the Vedic keys away from the people, so because they were misusing it. What do they say? A little knowledge is a dangerous thing. If you give knowledge to a rascal, he'll use it improperly, right? Like if you teach someone how to make an atom bomb, like America is very worried that different countries are going to learn how to make atom bombs. So they're very worried. They're doing all sorts of economic sanctions against these countries because they know that the people will misuse them eventually. So therefore, that's why people had to be taken away from the Vedic literatures. So that was Lord Buddha. And Lord Buddha, he, as I said, he appeared in 563 and disappeared in 483. You can count those years. And so, all right, so things went on. You know, people were more peaceful. Buddhism was established all over India under the Emperor Ashoka. I think most of you know that, come from India. Established it all over India. But that really wasn't Krishna's plan, that everybody would be a Buddhist in India. You know, Krishna wanted to bring people back to the real understanding of the Vedic literatures. But Krishna understood it needed a step-by-step approach. You couldn't just bring people back because, you know, the Brahmins would just, like, wreak havoc again. So therefore, he arranged in the year, now we're into the Common Era, 788, another great personality appeared. Shankaracharya. Not Sankarshan. Sankarshan is Lord Balaram. So anyways, and Shankaracharya is Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva states in the Purana, the Shiva Purana, he says, in the Kali Yuga, I will appear to bewilder the atheists. So what he did is he taught through his different works like Visarika Rakya Bhasha, which is a commentary on Vyasadeva's Vedanta Sutra, he taught Buddhism using the Vedas. Not exactly Buddhism, because Buddhism that was being taught then was like voidism. Everything is void. So he taught everything is one, which is, you know, very similar. In other words, there's no God, no personality. Ultimately, we just merge into the oneness, the energy of God. And actually, in one sense, we're all God. How we fell down to this position, that he couldn't explain. That's the fallacy in his argumentation. That, you know, if I say that I'm God, but I'm an illusion now, that means illusion is more powerful than me. That means I'm not God. So it's contradictory. It's actually contradictory to say you're God in illusion. And if I say I'm God and not an illusion, that's even foolish. Because then, you know, if I'm God and I'm not an illusion, what am I doing with my toothaches and my headaches and my Excedrin headaches? Anyway, what am I doing? Why? You know, if I'm God, I wouldn't just be sitting here. I'd be controlling all of you and wouldn't be worried about finances, about the temple or anything. You know, I don't need anybody. And I'm not God. So anyway, so there's fallacies, but Shankaracharya had a purpose. And his purpose was to bring people back to the Vedas. So in order to bring people even further back, there were a group of other acharyas who appeared. First after Shankaracharya, in 1017, actually, 1017, I'm right, appeared a great acharya called Sripad Ramanujacharya. Now in India, we have these different sampradayas or disciplic successions. Ramanujacharya is the head of the Lakshmi Sampradaya, the Sri Sampradaya. Like if you go to Andhra Pradesh, for example, or Tamil Nadu, you'll see temples like Srirangam. You'll see temples like Tirupati. All these temples are focused on the Sri Sampradaya worship, Lakshmi Narayan worship. So he appeared and he wrote a commentary on the Vedanta called the Sri Bhashya. That's a commentary. Bhashya means a commentary. So, and he brought people back to the right understanding that, yes, there's God. And God is all-powerful. He's in the spiritual world and you should worship him.
But it really wasn't a complete circle yet, because Krishna had a plan to bring people to the point of understanding that you can be the friend of God, you can dance with God, He can be your buddy, you can have God as your son. So people weren't ready for that yet. You know, so you have to preach according, or share according to time, place, and circumstance. That's the point. Like when Prabhupada came to the United States, he explained Krishna consciousness according to time, place, and circumstance. What did he say? One time he said, chant Hare Krishna and stay high forever. Huh? Of course, most of you now don't know what that means. Probably not. Akshay doesn't know what it means. He's just a fanatic Hare Krishna. What does he know? So, so stay high forever means the people there were taking some herbal medicine. To become happy. And, you know, it was available everywhere, little pills, herbal, but it wasn't exactly herbal, some of it was chemical. So they advertised, the devotees advertised, chant Hare Krishna, stay high forever. Oh, wow, stay high. And it's true. You get very high and you stay high. But not like intoxication, which is an illusion. Intoxication is an illusion within an illusion. So you actually get into reality that's really high. But intoxication is low. It's actually stay low forever instead of stay high forever. So that's what we don't like. Intoxication puts you in the mode of ignorance. I mean, who wants to be ignorant? I mean, like when Prabhupada came to New York, he had to step over people who were intoxicated to get in his door, or they moved out of the way. He was in New York. You know, there's a lot of intoxicated people lying on the street. And when I went to the university, I hate to admit it, I mean, I didn't take intoxication, but I had a lot of trouble getting into my dormitory on Saturday morning because all the students were just lying there in the hallway. And in India now, too, liquor is becoming very popular. There's so many liquor stores in India. So let's get back to the history before I start talking about other things. So then there was a string of other teachers who appeared just to reinforce the point that God exists and the Vedas teach that there's God. Because actually the Vedas teach there's God. Even if you go to the Rig Veda, it says, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Pada Pashanti Yat Surya. All the demigods are looking to Vishnu. All the Vedas. And Krishna in the Gita says, you know, by all the Vedas I'm to be known. So, using the same Vedic knowledge that Shankaracharya was misinterpreting, under the order of Krishna, these great Acharyas brought people back to the right understanding. And the second one was Madhvacharya, who appeared in 1317. And then, we'll just talk about those two Acharyas. And then it came time to really teach about intimate love of Krishna. So then Krishna's Yuga avatar was getting ready to come. And who's that Yuga avatar? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he had to send some people beforehand. So he sent an incarnation of Mahavishnu. Who's that?
Advaita Acharya.
They know everything. It's good. You should come for every class. So they said, in 1434, Advaita Acharya, who was an incarnation of Mahavishnu, expansion of Krishna, appeared, also Sadashiva. He appeared, and he started to preach. But, or share. I mean, we have to say, we can't use the word preach anyway. He started to share Krishna consciousness, but there were so many, you know, people around him. This was in West Bengal in India. So many people around him who were opposed to it said, no, let's just go back and be Shaktas. Let's go back and worship the demigods. You know, why do we have to surrender to Krishna? He got so upset that he started praying for an appearance of Krishna. He said, Krishna, you have to come. This is too difficult for me. As they say, this is beyond my pay scale. Put in modern language. So he was praying for Krishna to appear. So then the next incarnation of Krishna that appeared was in 1473, Lord Nityananda, who was Balaram. So Balaram appears to prepare the ground for Krishna appearing. This is like a typical thing. Just like Balaram is the older brother, Dauji, we call him, right? Dauji Maharaj, anyone's heard of that? So Balaram's the older brother. So he appears and he manifests. Even in a temple, all the different, let's say, parts that are used to serve the deities are considered incarnations of Balaram. So Balaram appeared, and that's Lord Nityananda, and he was waiting for Lord Chaitanya to appear. He appeared many years before Lord Chaitanya. And, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, and then other great devotees like Madhavendra Puri were there at the same time. And Advaita Acharya, Madhavendra Puri, was the first one to actually exhibit, like, supreme ecstasy and love of God, like to preach about intimate relationships with God. I mean, it's there in the Vedas, but he was the first one to bring that out and share with people openly. Others, you know, was hidden before that. And so he initiated Advaita Acharya. And he also had association with Lord Nityananda. Advaita Acharya took initiation in 1482 from Madhavendra Puri. So then a whole bunch of other, I don't say bunch, but a lot of other acharyas appeared, like Loganatha Goswami. I'm not going to give the date for that. And then finally in 1486, who appeared? Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya appeared. And he's Krishna himself in the mood of Radharani. And he appeared to teach the highest truth. And he also appeared for his internal reasons to taste that relationship that Radharani has with Krishna. Because from Radharani's standpoint, he wanted to have the mentality of Radharani so he could enjoy, because Radharani enjoys more than Krishna. She controls Krishna by her love. And so he wanted to understand these things. So he appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's called Gauranga. That's the Gaura mantra. And that Gauranga, if you chant Gauranga, it actually gives you so much potency. It has the same potency as the Hare Krishna Maha mantra. Should we chant that? No, you don't want to chant that. Okay. I was going to ask everyone to say Gauranga, but he said no.
Oh, no, I thought you meant on the beat.
No, not on the beat. He said no, so I'm, don't chant Gauranga.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to say, when I say three, everyone go Gauranga. One, two, three. Gauranga! Okay. That's nice. There's one great acharya who prays Gauranga balite habi pula gashirir. When I chant the name of Gauranga, will I feel hair on, you know, standing on end of my body and, you know, quivering in my body? So that happens. That's when one becomes a devotee, a great devotee of Krishna. One feels so much ecstasy that practically they have to call a psychiatrist. So you have to be careful who you show ecstasy in front of. I mean, if your parents are not devotees, if you show ecstasy, you'll end up somewhere you don't want to end up. So ecstasy should be shown only amongst the devotees. Just like our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, he was always absorbed in this ecstasy, and sometimes, you know, he just held back the ecstatic symptoms because nobody would understand. But there are several instances, like when he went to Miami, Florida, and also Atlanta, Georgia, the same thing occurred. He started to talk about Lord Chaitanya, and he recited this particular prayer written by Lochandas Thakur. And he just went into trance for minutes. And the devotees were shocked. They didn't know what to do. So they chanted Hare Krishna. And they asked Prabhupada, what should we do when that happens? And Prabhupada said, he apologetically, basically, it doesn't happen very often. I'm sorry, basically. And so, you know, the pure devotees, they hide. But that's what's in store. If you become Krishna conscious, that's what's in store. You'll be in so much ecstasy that, constant ecstasy. When I told my mother that when I joined the movement, she said, that's not natural. She said, you got to be miserable too. So, but it is, materially it's true. You got to be miserable to enjoy the happiness materially. You got to be hungry to enjoy eating. I mean, that materially, she was speaking the truth, but she didn't understand the spiritual reality. So, anyway, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared for those particular reasons. His other associates appeared. I'll just mention a few, like Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, who was Radharani too, in 1487. And then the next generation of devotees appeared right after that. That's 1488, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, sorry. 1489, Rupa Goswami. So these were the Goswamis who compiled the literatures, Nana Shastra Vicharanaka Nipadosa Dharma Samsapako, to establish the practices that we follow today. They appeared right after Lord Chaitanya's associates. Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, and then finally Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, who wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita. That was in 1496. And then the other Goswamis, I'm going to go quickly. And then 1510, Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. And then, anyway, I don't have time to go through all these things. I think we've spoken almost enough. So, just to go a little bit more to the modern times, after Lord Chaitanya disappeared from this world, Jiva Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami completed the construction of Radha Kund in 1554. In 1570, the Emperor Akbar, who was a Mughal, he met Srila Jiva Goswami and contributed a lot for the construction of the temples in Vrindavan. And let's go a little fast forward because I want to get to Prabhupada. And let's go, I'm skipping a lot. And then in 1670, after the appearance of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who was the next main acharya, there the Mughal Emperor Aurangzeb attacked Vrindavan. And the deities were brought to different places like Jaipur, Udaipur, to protect them. Some of them were actually hidden, and some of them remained. And then, in the modern time, in 1838, now we're getting to the modern acharyas, the appearance of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And in 1838, we also have the appearance of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, which is interesting. So that means that these things are all arranged for by Krishna. Like when Krishna says that, you know, whenever there's irreligion, I descend. So this applies to his devotees. His devotees are called Shaktavesh avatars. That means they're given the potency to carry out the mission of Krishna. Shortly after that, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur appeared in 1874. And then in 1896, who appeared? His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. The same year that Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings, The Life and Precepts of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, went to the West. It's 1896. So they went to McGill University and other universities there. And then, so Srila Prabhupada appeared. And then in 1922... And we're going to talk about this next week, too, in regard to the whole presentation we're going to do. Prabhupada met his spiritual master. And remember, Prabhupada was very young at that time. You know, 26 years old. And his spiritual master gave him his life's mission. What was his life mission? Preach in the West. You know, he's a young man. And he was a follower of Mahatma Gandhi at that particular time. And he said, your mission is to preach in English, which meant preaching in the West, because obviously preaching in India, you're going to preach in Hindi, Bengali, or some of the languages there, which Srila Prabhupada spoke. And then 11 years later, in 1933, Prabhupada took initiation. In 1936, Prabhupada's spiritual master passed away. And then after that time, Srila Prabhupada's life began to, his material, not material, you can't call a pure devotee's life material, but the external things of Prabhupada's life started to fall apart. His business, his family, everything started to fall apart. Because the last instruction he got from his spiritual master, less than a month before his spiritual master left this world, was to preach in English. And so he was always meditating on that instruction, trying to fulfill the instruction by doing business and making money.
But Krishna didn't have that in mind. So then Prabhupada took Vanaprastha in 54. In 1959, Prabhupada took sannyas. And after compiling his three volumes of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 1965, Prabhupada sailed to America, and in 66 is the 50th anniversary. That's why I'm talking about dates right now. Prabhupada incorporated the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And then in 1977, Srila Prabhupada left this world. So in 11 short years, Prabhupada established over 100 temples and preaching centers and over 5,000 initiated disciples. So this is the present history. And so this history, as we're going to present next week, this history or the descriptions are going to increase as time goes on. Just like Aditya Narayan was explaining about the book distribution, how we're increasing each year from practically nothing, you know, 20%, 25%, 30%. So this movement is increasing because the purpose of this whole history of Vaishnavism and all the acharyas is to eventually, as the Bhagavatam says, create a revolution in the misdirected lives of an impious civilization, to change civilization peacefully, not violence, but a revolution in consciousness. So this is what's coming up. It may take a few hundred years. Some of us may not be here for that. Some of us may go back to Godhead like Akshay, but the rest of us, you know, I'll probably be here, but so in another body, several more bodies. So that's really what's happening. So this is the history, and this year we're celebrating Srila Prabhupada's 50th starting of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Prabhupada started with practically nothing in New York, with only $10 worth of rupees, which he couldn't change because there was no black market at that time. And then from there, just by chanting, this whole movement has grown dramatically. And now we're so prominent in India, we have hundreds of millions of followers in India. Now, if you go to the Sunday feast, I mean, here it's small time, but if you go to the Sunday feast in Mumbai or Delhi, there, anywhere between 10,000 to 30,000 people come to the Sunday feast. It's a lot, isn't it? How do you cook that much? Who's cooking this Sunday, you know? So, I mean, this movement is dynamically, dramatically, exponentially expanding, and you can be part of it, and you can, as we'll explain next week, you can also be a hero. Okay? So, thank you very much. I think we have to give out the awards now. There's our hero, Aditya Narayan, who's the inspiration for all the book distributions. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.